Welcome to today's episode, where we explore the evolving landscape of luxury retail and e-commerce. Joining us is Joshua Young, the head of e-commerce at Meslan, a company renowned for its handcrafted luxury shoes, made with passion and precision in Spain for over four decades. Joshua offers a deep understanding of global market trends and successful e-commerce practices. In today's conversation, Joshua recounts Meslan's journey from a small operation selling belts door-to-door to becoming a major player in the luxury shoe market across the US. We explore the complexities of crafting unique high-end products from exotic materials like alligator and ostrich to the traditional craftsmanship that defines Meslan's offerings. Joshua also shares insights into the challenges and successful of managing a luxury brand's e-commerce platform, discussing customer loyalty, innovative marketing strategies, and how Meslan maintains its allure in a competitive digital landscape. Whether you're an e-commerce entrepreneur, a marketing professional, or technical head, or simply lover of fine footwear, this episode is packed with insights that illuminate the path to success in the luxury retail space. So let's dive in and learn from one of the best in the business. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Hey Joshua, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. How is Las Vegas?
A little rainy, but other than that, fantastic.
Really? And I know you've been traveling a lot lately. How things?
Yeah. Not too far. I mean, just one state over, Huntington Beach, California. So, trading the rain for nice beach weather.
Okay, that's good. So, Joshua, I know you are leading e-commerce at Meslan. I think it's a very fascinating brand. Tell us a little bit about the brand and about your role.
Yeah, absolutely. Meslan, we've been selling shoes here in the U.S. for over 40 years now. Our owner, Antonio Sanchez, came from Spain selling just belts, very small, going door to door, really trying to sell where he can. And then now we're, all over the U.S. As I mentioned, we've been selling here for 40 years. All of our shoes are handcrafted and handmade in Spain. And we focus on quality, comfort, and unique designs.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the website and the design, they're really unique and amazing. Some exotics designs, alligator, crocodile, ostrich, lizard, right? But overall, the collections, I mean, it's really like very high-end luxurious products, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Luxury shoes is our business, and we know people can make pretty boring shoes, and Antonio wanted to go the other route, so seeing a lot of flashy things.
It's easy to make a boring shoe. It's much more complex to make it interesting, right?
Absolutely.
So what are the special or the unique characteristics of a luxury product? I mean, in terms of customer journeys, platform.
Yeah, obviously it's a little bit different. When we speak to other brands or agencies, it's always, with an asterisk. The customer buying window and the attribution windows have to be extended because our average order value is a little bit higher than most brands. Customer journey, again, that can be anywhere from starting at the top of the funnel, that could be a 6-month process. And then you're also met with, specific audiences that you can reach. We're not able to reach the everyday customer or the everyday consumer. So also being a little more creative in the marketing strategy to reach new audiences, to retain customers. So far, it's been a great success, and we're continuing to roll out new things.
Great. So what are the next steps for you guys in terms of the e-commerce platform itself? What are 2024 and further plans? I mean, just growing the business, opening new channels, profitability issues, I mean, all of the above. Where is the focus?
Yeah, I mean, we've been very, you know, very grateful and very fortunate. We continue to increase the business 20% year over year, and in fact, overpacing at times for that. So, been very fortunate. But you know, we're releasing a lot of new collections. Meslon actually is, you know, we own a few other lines, a few other collections. So. We're rolling out some new styles, some new lines that we previously used to carry. For example, Meslon owns Bacco Bucci, which is a more athletic kind of sneaker collection, mm-hmm. something a little more casual. And then we just launched this last month a cable collection, which is more of a everyday business shoe that is more affordable for everybody. So really expanding on the business, different collections, trying to get something for everybody.
Amazing. So when the majority of the industry are zooming in on what works for them and what's not, shrinking mm-hmm. SKUs, you are expanding, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of the opposite, you know, we're hearing things, you know, with the big department stores, people aren't buying luxury stuff anymore, but you know, as I mentioned, we've been very fortunate and we're in the position to continue to grow. So
amazing. So what's the secret sauce? What's the explanation for that?
I want to say it's our product, mm-hmm. but we have incredible customer loyalty. You know, 60 to 70% of our buyers are return customers. And of that, you know, those customers have been phenomenal because of our product. You know, it makes marketing a lot easier. Mm-hmm. The product kind of sells itself. And then with the quality that we offer and the comfort that it offers, it's almost a no brainer for most consumers. So we've been very lucky to have such a great loyalty from our customers. And it's, you know, it's just a matter of finding new ones.
Amazing. What's the feedback that you get from customers?
Yeah, I mean, so far it's all been positive. You know, we're continuing to roll out new applications, new functionalities. Our kind of strategy when it comes to e-commerce is very similar to that of Amazon. You know, just make things convenient and fast and as seamless as possible for your customers. And, you know, in that case, they'll reward you as well.
Yes, no, you mentioned like 70% retention. So I mm-hmm. wonder, you know, people buy not just the product and the feature, they're buying experiences. There's Absolutely. A lot of emotions involved, feelings. So if I buy one of the products and I keep buying more and more and more, is it why do I do that? Is it because I want to, I enjoy the product, obviously, but there are probably mm-hmm. more reasons for that.
Yeah, absolutely. We have very hands-on customer service. We make everyone feel welcome. You know, we used to have, prior to COVID, you know, 7 stores. And on that process, we were very hands-on, very personal. We put shoes on customers. We gave them pretty much anything they needed. The atmosphere for the business was very, you know, we treated all of our customers very specially and, you know, give them the white glove service. And that's something we've been grateful to maintain over, although, you know, closing the stores and you can't physically offer that in person anymore. Sure. We've had such a great customer service team, great loyalty rewards programs and things like that to continue to offer this white glove service and make these customers feel special. We want our customers to know we appreciate their business and we do everything we can to show that.
Yeah. So obviously retention is a key and loyalty programs, rewards is one of the fundamentals of this. Can you share more? What do you do in terms of the rewards? How does it work? And also the loyalty program?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit of a transition right now in full transparency. We just switched from Loyalty Lion over to a new application called GrowWave. Offers a little bit more of a functionality than just a rewards program. They offer mm-hmm. the functionality of a wish list, some UGC things, Instagram, a lot of exciting things. So we went ahead and made that transition a couple days ago, actually, went live with it. But ideally, you know, customers, we don't do anything too complex. We offer a lot of great discounts and rewards for the products, but we have, you know, rewards points, and we have a slider for redemption that customers can use. And then obviously we incentivize all these things for points, like subscribing to the newsletter, referring friends, following social media. So all exciting things like that, that just, you know, a customer seemed to love.
Yeah. So specifically on the backend side of things, supply chain, is it like you host, you have inventories here in the US, or just what are the usually the shipping times and how do you manage, you know, different catalogs and SKUs?
Yeah, absolutely. We have our warehouse team. We have our ERP that we use. We just transitioned to SAP. Business One. And so far, that's been our strategy. I mean, we're a little old fashioned when it comes to the warehouse side of things. But yeah, we have our shoes based here in Huntington Beach, California. That's where our warehouse and corporate office is. And then our factory is over in Spain. And yeah, pretty simple stuff.
Nice. So the design and manufacturing is in Spain.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Everything. Okay. All of our products are handcrafted, handmade in Spain.
Sure, sure. And in terms of the marketing side of things, what are you doing there? I mean, what's working for you? I think it's very interesting for other D2C brands also to learn what's working in acquisition these days.
Absolutely. It's a little tricky now with, you know, everyone trying to be automated with PMax and Google, and then, you know, Bing just rolled out their version of it. So it's a little difficult. If my advice to any of your listeners, you know, the concept that they push out of just trust the platform and they'll handle the ads, just take a little caution to that. You know, things can become complicated if so. But right now we've had tremendous success with our Facebook paid channels, specifically seeing a lot of, you know, high converting top of funnel customers, as well as, you know, maybe the people who saw us at the stores a little more bottom of funnel just kind of forgot about us. See our ads on Facebook as well. And, you know, the social media platform overall has been a tremendous grower for us. And with the introductions of, you know, the Facebook shop, the Instagram shop, makes things a lot easier to convert for these customers. It's a platform they're familiar with. So, so far, Facebook has been our biggest success. Still trying to work out some things with Google and PMax, trying to find out what works best. But so far in Google specifically, our branded campaigns are the campaigns that we have the least trouble with, seeing a lot more better things there than the PMax.
Got it. So you mentioned the success on Facebook. It's on the paid media side of things?
Yes. Paid media for Facebook specifically. Our Instagram is growing tremendously organically, getting, you know, anywhere from 200 to 400 new followers every day. And that's on the organic side.
And how the creative looks like? I mean, you're primarily doing videos, or it's picture based, or content?
A little bit of both. I think for successful social media, you have to offer a lot of diverse content, from UGC to Instagram reels to static images. And that's probably the most important key to our success on the social media, is the flexibility in the content. So, you know, every once in a while, we'll have actors post our shoes, and then we, you know, just follow up with that. And then we include, kind of going back to making our customers feel special, a lot of our customers that, you know, tag us and post us, we recognize that on our page and stories and things like that.
Yeah. And these are talents or creators you find on a dedicated platform, or you work also with influencers? How this process is managed?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. We just started with Rakuten to kind of help with the affiliate influencer side of things. Very good results there, seeing good things there. We recently worked with a PR company that was very helpful to us, got a lot of exposure on television for us. But as far as influencers, we are a little behind on that, I'll admit, but we have the opportunity of, as I mentioned, you know, a lot of celebrities, athletes tend to wear and post our shoes. So people like Michael Jordan, you know, Shaq, we made custom shoes for a large size 24. so just a lot of things like that, that we're very fortunate for in the influencer type of things.
Wow, nice. Nice. No, it's really interesting because, you know, with in a cookieless world, cookie deprecation, and also obviously you're looking for this first party data, and I assume creators, UGC, influencers is an important part of any marketing activities, right?
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, we're a little behind on that game, but we do see the difficulty as well, you know, trying to capture these analytics, just because everything is, you know, is a little tough with attributions now, claiming revenue, claiming analytics and things like that, that aren't necessarily true. But yeah, it's extremely difficult now.
Yeah. Well, why do you think, I mean, attribution is difficult? Because I hear it from all over.
Yeah. You know, everybody wants their platform or their analytics to look great. So there, you know, there's a lot of different behind the scenes things from first click to last click to, you know, we're really starting to see all these platforms just, you know, taking account for the impression, the sale, the click through, when in all actuality, it's, you know, it's becoming a little more difficult because you have three platforms claiming that that sale came from them. But in all actuality, it's probably, it's actually most likely just one of them.
Yeah. Attribution is getting more and more complicated also in a kind of in an omni-channel scenario where you really don't know, you know, what triggers the purchase and where it started. And obviously, you know how it ends, but you don't know where it started and what was the journey, right? That's probably absolutely the next wave of data that we need, all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be fantastic. You know, just one platform that could give it all. But yeah.
Specifically on omni-channel, right? What exactly are you looking for? I mean, what's your KPIs on that specific topic?
Yeah. You know, obviously revenue is the number one for everybody. That's
sure.
First and foremost. But as you know, as we continue to expand, our KPIs have transitioned a little bit. Being a little more understandable about, you know, our ROAS specifically. And, you know, before we used to be a little bit over a 10 ROAS, and now we're, as we begin to expand the top of funnel, we're slowly starting to down that because, you know, we're seeing new audiences, first impressions, things like that. So our KPIs have changed a little bit, even from a couple of years ago, but, definitely ROAS. Right now, the most important one is probably our click-through rate. Just having new audiences come to the site. We're seeing a lot of new sessions every day from all different advertising platforms, different channels, things like that. So as mentioned, we kind of had to adjust based off of the increase in traffic and knowing that, you know, the return is going to be, the expectation is going to be a little different based off of where we're shooting in the funnel.
Yeah. Joshua, I know you have a background of, you know, coding. You also build websites.
Absolutely.
You also have a marketing agency background. And how do you prioritize things, you know, on a day-to-day basis? How do you make decision first on prioritization, but also where you need to spend more time doing more deep dive? How do you, you know, manage your day-to-day in that respect?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it helps that I'm a jack of all trades. I've had a little bit of experience in everything. So, you know, first and foremost, it's always what we can do on the customer side of things. We want customer journey to be the best experience possible. So if that means we're adjusting the website, we need to reduce our JavaScript. We need to, you know, whatever the case may be there to improve customer functionality. That's always first and foremost prioritized. We again, are very lucky to have our customer base and want to continue to give them the best experience. So I guess in a general answer, that's where we do things. But we do need to take deeper dives as we continue to expand. It's, you know, slowly swimming into new waters. So I do a lot of analytical work nowadays, making sure that we're making the best decisions. But my team has been phenomenal in the support of that. So,
So what do you do on the analytics side? Obviously, you have the platform to gather analytics, which you would love to learn more about. But also, are you spending time with customer support, probably analyzing, you know, customer testimonials, feedbacks? I mean, how do you get a clarity of what's going on?
Yeah. It's reports all day. You know, I get 100 reports sent to my emails every day. Wow. But yeah, it's, you know, we have different reporting set up internally and through the platform. So, for example, you mentioned customer service. We use a little bit of the Zendesk analytics, which is the platform we use.
Sure.
And on top of that, you know, some internal reporting that we see from our customer service team. Same when it comes to other departments, our paid advertising team. You know, we use TapClicks for the internal types of analytics, and then we also use Data Studio. So a lot of custom reporting built to try and get the most accurate information. You know, we mentioned attribution is very difficult, so it's not like we can just read you know, whatever's available, but. A lot of reporting. I'm very hands-on with my team as well, so involved in a lot of day-to-day things to make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah. And how it relates to UI UX and customer journeys? I mean, how often do you update, you know, the website? Are you making like minor edits on every customer feedback, or you have your own philosophy on how to manage journeys?
Yeah, it's definitely a unique experience for us. We used to have a very traditional clientele of a lot of gentlemen 65 years or older. So, websites and technology is not the best, and we had a lot of user experience comments and things like that. So, now that we're expanding a lot more, we're reaching into a bit of these younger audiences. So, we don't make changes based off of every customer's feedback, but we do take it into heavy consideration. You know, we make changes on a day-to-day basis based off of, again, making the customer journey, the customer experience the best it can be. But when it comes to, you know, customer feedback, we definitely file it away. It's very important to us. But if we start to get a lot of that feedback, we make adjustments there. We research things. But we do make changes to our site, to our strategy on a day-to-day basis to, make sure everything is being as fine-tuned. We're putting out the best results possible.
Yeah. And I'm very interested also in your multi-channel strategy. You mentioned Facebook, obviously the Meta, right? Facebook and Instagram. Mm-hmm. That you also have a shop there, right? A store yourself,
correct,
right? And the social commerce. What about Amazon? What about other marketplaces? What are your plans there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we actually have two websites that don't compete with each other, but, you know, one is a regular price site. The other is something that's more discounted oriented, very similar to a Nordstrom Rack. We do have the shops on the social media platforms, and we are in Amazon as well. So Amazon's been a little bit trickier for us. You know, a higher price point item isn't ideal, but with the release of, you know, luxury shops and stuff like that on Amazon, it's been a little bit easier. We just rolled out our cable collection, which is a little bit of a lower price point on Amazon as well. So people can begin to look forward to that. Yeah, it's definitely difficult to maintain the balance between these channels, especially with the variety that we're beginning to offer with price point and things like that. Because we had this problem with PMax where, you know, we have our main channel and then our discount channel, and those were starting to overlap each other because of, you know, the keywords. Obviously, Meslon, our secondary site is called Meslon Warehouse. The branded words, keywords kept overlapping, and eventually it got to the point where everything was too saturated.
Wow.
Yeah. So now we, I mean, that's my bad blood with PMax. We had a lot of issues with that. So,
yeah.
But, it's been difficult. You know, we almost have to treat each channel specifically like its own front, just because of the variety that's being offered. But, you know, as far as the functionality side of things, Chantable has been our main thing to kind of get things loaded and get things in there. So that makes life a lot easier on the forefront of things. But for us, it's been a little bit difficult trying to maintain our specific channels in the ways that we want them to, because of things like automation, because of price point. And with that, you know, because of the variety, we also change our marketing strategy a little bit. We need to, you know, for our Meslon site, we attract, you know, more of a regular price customer, where new styles, fashion are more of a priority. And then with Meslon Warehouse, we target tends to be more of a price wary customer. So each of our channels do have its own, you know, audience, its own expectations. And yeah, we've just been treating them as their individual sales channels pretty much.
Yes. So Meslon Wholesale targets other dealers, or can you share some of the types of customers that you have there? Not just the names, but probably the type of customers you have.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, because we do offer a little bit more of a flashy shoe or a flashy product, we do very well in the urban cities. We have a lot of great clientele there, some B2B brick and mortars, a lot of private, you know, store owners who just love to carry our product in their stores. We do work with the big guys, but, you know, even on the B2B side, we like to make our customers feel special. So, we have a lot of, you know, brick and mortar, mom and pop shops of, you know, the store's been in their family for decades and it was passed to them. So that's a lot of our B2B business. They're great. They support us very well. And we like to do the same.
Interesting. And what is the experience that those B2B customers are getting? How is it different from the B2C?
It's a little bit different because of, I guess, fear, you know, the B2B stores, you know, they have to worry about things like overheads, you know, if this product will sell with their customers. So there is a lot more of a hesitation type feel in that B2B market right now. But on the B2C side of our business, it's actually quite the opposite. You know, we're seeing customers, spend like there's no tomorrow, and you know, we're not seeing the hesitation or the, you know, almost the feel of something's coming. I know that's something that, you know, for the past few years, my team and I have internally talked about, you know, where's the economy going? What's going to happen? Especially this year being an election year. It's, you know, people are not quite sure on how things will go. So I get on the B2B side, you know, it seems a lot more people are playing it safe now. There's a little bit, you know, more caution there.
Interesting. So the B2B is more caution and the B2C is like growing substantially.
Yeah. Yeah. Like everyone cashed out on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's good to see that though, you know, it definitely gives us reassurance when it comes to the marketing side of things, that, you know, customers are comfortable, you know, spending a little bit more and enjoying the things they want.
Great, great. Joshua, what are the things that you're proud of in your career?
Well, you know, it's not, I'm fairly young, you know, it's not been too long of a career, but, you know, just the, we mentioned a little bit earlier, being a jack of all trades, you know, I've been very blessed to be in a position where I can apply my skill sets in different ways, from coding to my marketing agency to, you know, organic social media growth. You know, as far as my story here with Meslon, you know, I started as a stock boy at 18, and I've been with the company for going on 8 years now. Started as a stock boy, then, you know, worked my way to a salesman and worked my way up to the position I am now. And very grateful that, you know, I have a fantastic team to work with now. And, you know, it's definitely great to be in my position, the age I am, to have the knowledge I am. So I'm very, very grateful and very happy. I'd probably say that's my biggest accomplishment from, mm-hmm. you know, coming right out of high school, being a sock boy, to being in the position I am now, where I have so much, you know, experience in the industry. I've experienced a lot of different things, from, you know, coding to, you know, even just the basic customer service calls. So, just really, my growth.
Yeah, it's really a nice journey, although it's not so long, but it's really successful right now. Why do you think you've been able to make it, you know, from where we started until now? What are the key points that you can share?
You know, my grandfather used to say, the best thing to be successful is to be a chameleon. You know, you adapt to your surroundings. So, you know, when I was 18, you know, they needed stock shelves. So I stocked shelves. When, you know, COVID hit, I happened to know Shopify experience. It was something I learned and became proficient in, and same with marketing. And, you know, I was able to benefit that and apply that. I mean, really just being able to adapt to your surroundings, not getting too stuck in, you know, one way, and being flexible, because you never know what opportunities are going to come. You never know what, you know, and this is from sales, this is from marketing, this is from really all the experiences I've had. Things can change fairly quickly. I mean, we saw that with COVID, and, you know, the more you are able to adapt, the more successful you can tend to be.
Nice. And what some of the tips that you can provide to other e-commerce leaders and other brands going to 2024?
Yeah. Speaking of change, you know, make sure you're up to date. A lot of new things are coming out. A lot of things are changing, you know, with AI being such a big thing that it is now, with, you know, customer journeys changing from, you know, the buying experience. We're starting to see, the success of UGC is primarily because of trust. You know, it gains that feeling of, this is another person telling it to me versus being sold to me. So, you know, UGC was probably something that was almost laughed at 4 or 5 years ago. You know, not a lot of people did it, but as we can see with TikTok and the way things are now, it's a huge, huge, part of content now. So, yeah, I mean, just stay informed, be aware of what's coming to the best of your knowledge, and, you know, roll with the punches, I guess.
Yes. And be a chameleon type of person.
Absolutely.
I think this is like the theme of this episode. So well done. Great.
Absolutely.
Joshua, anything else you want to add?
No. I mean, thank you for having me. It was great to be on the show, and, you know, I look forward to hearing back.
Amazing. So it was, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, vimmi.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.